All right, back on the Young Turks, Cenk and Anna with you guys. Let me read some tweets as quickly as I can here. Jan F writes in, money can buy you a lot of things, but it can't buy you common sense. We should be thankful that his family is this stupid. Agreed. Look, all of them, born on third base, thought they hit a triple. So Leanne then says, if we could get both of Trump's sons in jail, it'd be a win for the wildlife too. Good point. And of course, remember,
animals are innocent.
I think that played. Okay. Anyway, the W do, there's no way I said that right, writes in, it's not just that they're stupid, too stupid to do a cover up, it's that they actually think that there will be no consequences, which is exactly the point that JR was making during the break. He's like, they've never had any consequences in their whole lives. So that's why they willy-nilly admit, yeah, I went to go get opposition research from the Russians. What is that? That's illegal. So what? I've done like 28 illegal things. My last name is Trump.
I don't know if there will be consequences for it.
Well, we're going to find out. Yeah. I agree with you. T. Russello says, if you go into a store to rob it, but they don't have any money, you're still charged with robbery, which is very true. And finally, on the net neutrality issue, Chris Allen says, the internet for the rich, Trump will be loving that. Well, he's not just loving it, he's the one that's making that happen. So for all you libertarians out there who thought, oh, Trump, MAGA, Trump's awesome, he's going to protect freedom, make the internet free again. Oops. So even
make
some of those guys
free
now,
again. Like,
I know.
Anyway.
Even some of those guys are like, oh, that's kind of unfortunate what he's doing about net neutrality. Oh, yay, that's right, because Comcast doesn't give a shit that you're a right winger. They'll still charge you more money because they'd like to make more money.
At least none of them wrote a book titled In Trump We Trust and then complained and whined about Trump after he got elected. Like Ann Coulter, who I'm debating at Politicon. You guys should come check it out.
Politicon.com/TYT to get tickets. Anna's debating Ann Coulter. I will be debating Ben Shapiro. Oh, man, I should have been saying this all day today. Tomorrow, if you're a member, watch the Joe Manchin interview live. Yes, I'm interviewing Senator Joe Manchin from West Virginia tomorrow live at 11:15 a.m. Eastern. So go to tytnetwork.com/join, get a free membership this month. You get a 1 month of membership free. You use promo code FREETYT. Okay, so go to tytnetwork.com/join, put in the promo code FREETYT, and then tomorrow morning make sure that you're watching for members live. When I interview Joe Manchin, that is going to be fascinating. And why does he want to come on? I don't know. And so that I don't know which way he's going to go. I know which way I'm going to go. And I can't imagine that would be an uninteresting interview.
It should be fun.
All right, what's next?
All right. Ivanka Trump and Donald Trump are facing some criticism after Ivanka briefly substituted Trump in his seat at the G20 session. Now, she was pictured sitting next to a number of world leaders, including Angela Merkel, also the president of China. And some are arguing that this is unacceptable. She is not an elected official, so as a result, she's unqualified and she shouldn't have sat there. I'm going to go ahead and defend her, but first let me give you the details.
Wow, really?
Yes,
okay.
I am.
Interesting.
All right, I think this is much to do about nothing, but let me give you the details about it. So Ivanka was sitting in the back and then briefly joined the main table when the president had to step out, and the president of the World Bank started talking. Excuse me. So this is a response to the criticism from a senior Trump administration official. She says Ivanka Trump was sitting in the back and then briefly joined the main table when the president had to step out. And the president of the World Bank started talking as the topic involved areas such as African development, areas that will benefit from the facility just announced by the World Bank. Excuse me. Now, Ivanka Trump wasn't just there dilly-dallying. I'm sorry. I have a really bad cough, guys. I'm trying to like keep it together.
All right. Because I like this. It's created more suspense. I'm curious as to your defense of her. I can't wait to that.
Cough is driving me crazy.
There's actually a couple of things we're probably going to disagree about on this story. Okay.
I apologize. Okay, so so he steps out briefly. She takes his seat. People are upset because they think it's nepotism, which, yes, to some degree it's nepotism, but it's been nepotism from the very beginning. So if you're upset about that, I understand. But to say, well, Rex Tillerson, you know, he was appointed as Secretary of State, so he should be the one who should sit there. Okay, understood, but he also wasn't an elected official. He certainly is not qualified for that job. And she's actually there talking to world leaders about something, an effort that she took part in that I think is incredibly important. So the World Bank is trying to raise $1 billion in order to help provide capital to female entrepreneurs in both developing and developed countries, right? And so she's a woman who is an entrepreneur. She's been, you know, trying to raise awareness about these issues. And so she, you know, nudged Donald Trump to actually be part of this initiative. And as a result, the United States is going to contribute $50 million, which I think is great. This is good news, right? And so I think it's totally fine for her to sit there briefly and have a discussion about that. It's not that big of a deal. And I feel like criticizing her for this specific thing makes liberals seem incredibly petty. Mm-hmm. That's my take on it. Now, according to CNN, Ivanka, along with World Bank President Jim Yong Kim and Merkel, helped launch the World Bank backed program that will promote women's entrepreneurship in developing countries. Okay, so I don't know. Angela Merkel was asked about this, like, hey, do you find this unusual? What do you think? And here's what she said. Let's go to graphic 5. Ivanka Trump was part of the American delegation, so that is something that other delegations also do, and it is very well known that she works in the White House and that she is also engaged in certain initiatives.
So Anna, you make a compelling case in that she's part of the administration, this is something she cares about, and it is what it is. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, there's a couple points to be made. Number one, does it show that Trump cares about this issue if his way of caring is, I'm going to go take a bathroom break and Ivanka, you fill in on, it's an entrepreneurship for women. Whatevs, I'll let my daughter sit in on that. Okay, okay, so that's point one.
He did talk about it during his speech at the G20.
Okay. So. Secondly, if the Democrats had done this, people would lose their minds. If Hillary Clinton had won and was like, Chelsea Clinton will be sitting in for me in some incredibly important meetings with world leaders, every Republican would lose their mind.
Yep, okay? They would, that's right. And they would attack and it would be petty. And look, I only say that it would be petty if, you know, the context of the situation is the same context that we have here now. Now, please don't misunderstand me. I have no love for the Trumps, okay? And so it does pain me to defend them in this case, but fair is fair. And I feel like this is such a ridiculous criticism. They're actually doing something good here, right? Amongst all the terrible stuff that they're doing, here's something good. And they're trying to empower women in, you know, underprivileged countries. And I think that they, you know, credit where credit is due.
So on the substance of it, I agree with you. And I don't have a, and I'm glad that you're pointing that out furthermore. It just, you're right, the underlying issue is that they work in the White House in the first place.
Yes.
So if Angela Merkel was like, oh, here's all my kids and they'll be running Germany from now on. And so one of them will be doing handling our relationship with China. People will be like, really? Are you serious? And then the other one will sit in for me in international meetings. People would think that was incredibly strange. And by the way, a little demeaning if Merkel's like, oh, here's my daughter, it's take my daughter to work day, so she's sitting in for me at this meeting.
Yeah.
Now, the daughter is not 13, I get it, she's a grown up. On the other hand, Ivanka Trump, what has she accomplished other than being Ivanka Trump? I know people are gonna find that outrageous, but like, so Donald Trump said, if she weren't my daughter, it would be so much easier for her. We might have a disagreement on that too, Anna, because I think that is a preposterous statement.
Well, I think that it's difficult to have someone like Donald Trump as your father, right?
That's true, but it's also incredibly like,
you get easy opportunities that most people wouldn't get.
You have hundreds of millions of dollars that you wouldn't have had otherwise. Don't tell me that it's easy. I'm that it's hard for you. Boo hoo. Okay, so your dad's a monster. Sad day for you. But it like, would Ivanka Trump be sitting in that meeting if her name was Ivanka Johnson? No, what? Very, 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 very unlikely.
You're right about that. I don't disagree. But what I'm trying to say is we have criticized her quite a bit for saying that she wants to empower women when it appeared that she hadn't done anything to empower women. So here she is pushing Trump to do something good for female entrepreneurs. Whether you like it or not, she is an entrepreneur. I mean, obviously, she doesn't have a level playing field compared to other women who aren't as connected. But nonetheless, she is an entrepreneur and she's doing something good here. So instead of focusing on like, wah, she's sitting at the table, wah, there's a good side to this that I think, unfortunately, people who are criticizing it aren't looking at all.
Okay, so I think I take issue with your wah, but I've been known to phrase things that way too sometimes when talking about people I don't agree with. But look, last thing on this is that when they say if she weren't my daughter, it would be so much easier for her, I think that's what gets under people's skin. It certainly got under my skin. Because if you were to say, acknowledge the breaks that you've been given. By the way, I've been given 1,000 breaks. My dad's a wonderful guy and worked his ass off and put me in a situation where I could do the things that I did. But I'm internally grateful for that. And I don't think, I would have done it anyway, man. I don't care. I don't need anybody. And Ivanka, if she was just born dirt poor in West Virginia, she would have done all this anyway. And so it's only hurt her that she had hundreds of millions of dollars and a dad who became president. Just please don't insult our intelligence because you don't have any. So that, I guess, goes more towards what Donald Trump said and is doing more than Ivanka. And I do appreciate that you're pointing out that the more important thing is the substance of what they discussed that day, and that was good news.
Yes, just want to be fair. All right, let's move on to other news. An unnamed police officer in Baton Rouge has filed a lawsuit against Black Lives Matter over a man who unfortunately shot and killed 3 cops back in July of 2016. Now, the lawsuit has to do with the notion that Black Lives Matter incited so much violence that it led this man, Gavin Long, to ambush cops in Baton Rouge, which led to the death of 3 officers and also wounded 2 deputies and another officer. So lawyers for one of the wounded law enforcement officers filed the complaint Friday in US District Court for the Middle District of Louisiana against various arms of the Black Lives Matter movement and leaders, including DeRay Mixon and Janetta Elzey. So the complaint alleges that Black Lives Matter and its leaders are responsible for the shooting because they, quote, incited the violence against police in retaliation for the death of black men shot by police and, quote, did nothing to dissuade the ongoing violence and injury to police. Okay, so this, just to give you context, this shooting in Baton Rouge happened pretty close after the shooting that happened in Dallas, which also claimed the lives of police officials. After that shooting in Dallas, there were a number of statements made by Black Lives Matter condemning the violence, speaking out against it. But it doesn't matter, right? And look, it's what happened to these cops was horrific. You read the details about what happened to this particular cop, and you know the fact that he will be permanently disabled as a result of the shooting, and you feel sick to your stomach. But to say that Black Lives Matter incited this violence, I think is going a little far. And to say that they didn't do anything to dissuade the violence or speak out against it is just patently untrue.
So the shooters were not in any way connected to Black Lives Matter. That should count for something. So you're just putting it on them because, I don't know, one group is black and the shooter was black. He had nothing to do with the group, but I don't know, I can't tell the difference. So I'm gonna say it's Black Lives Matter. Second of all, the shooter in Dallas was actively rejected by several African American groups that he applied to. They're like, no, dude, there's something wrong with you. And they didn't take him in. Doesn't matter, damned if you do, damned if you don't. Well, I mean, he was black, he shot at cops. You're black and you care to make sure that cops actually serve the community. Hence, you must be guilty. Okay, so that's guilt by association. It has a clear racial component. And most importantly, I think it's un-American to say you shouldn't speak out on an issue that's important. And if you do, I'll sue you because I'll claim that your legitimate words on those issues that are political, First Amendment protected, all of that. I don't care. I will claim it led to violence in other areas to shut you up. and to make sure that you don't have those First Amendment rights. I thought conservatives were really, really concerned about debate in this country and First Amendment rights, and they wanted to make sure that everyone got a chance to speak. It turns out, well, for some of them, when it comes to Black Lives Matter, no.
And look, it's definitely true when it comes to Black Lives Matter, but there is this insane effort by the right wing in the country to go after anyone who wants to challenge authority, who wants to speak out, who wants to protest. Think about the fact that there were bills, state bills proposed indicating that, hey, if there are protesters blocking the street and a driver happens to accidentally run over some of them, well, it should be okay. Right? I mean, that's the kind of intimidation tactic that's being used by people in power. Forget the right wing, people in power who don't want individuals to use their First Amendment right to speak out. And that's a trend that we're seeing. It goes further than Black Lives Matter.
And by the way, in this case, or in all the cases right now, in this period of time, it is Republican legislators that are pushing that forward, including in Arizona, where they suggested arresting anyone who goes to protest if anyone at that protest were to do some crime at a later time. So even if they're not connected to that crime, whether it's smashing a window or anything like that, they would arrest all of the protesters and all the people who planned the protest that had nothing to do with the violence. Now that bill was so outrageous that it was pulled back. Even some, to be fair to conservatives, even some conservatives in Arizona were like, wait, wouldn't that cover Tea Party protests too and our protests? That's probably not a good idea. Yeah, of course it's not a good idea, whether you agree with the protest or don't agree with the protest. So that's why this lawsuit has a great number of issues. And by the way, if you did this in reverse, are you kidding me? So I guess we'd have to shut down almost every right-wing outlet and definitely Fox News, because they under this logic, they certainly do it in reverse, right?
I mean, Bill O'Reilly with Tiller the baby killer, Tiller the baby killer. Tiller got shot and killed, you know?
For being a quote unquote baby killer.
Exactly. So, you know, look, I think rhetoric matters. I think it's important. And I think everyone needs to dial it back right now because things have gotten super divisive. But to say that people rising up and speaking out against their unarmed children getting shot and killed, their unarmed family members getting shot and killed, to say that they're the ones that leads to all this violence is kind of crazy.
So this is all about perspective. I'll file a lawsuit too, how about that? Because what happens is it starts with a violent approach to things. So if someone is shot and killed, murdered by a particular police officer, and the police union, or that particular police department, or police departments nationwide, or Blue Lives Matter organization, whoever the hell that is, decides to say, hey, let's circle the wagons around this murderous cop and make sure he gets off, or we cover up what happened. The body camera slipped off. Oh, that footage was lost. And let's circle around and get him off, which they do the majority of the time. Then I'm upset because now you've now condoned this violence, which will then incite other violence from people who may or may not have listened to Black Lives Matter. And now you're the start of it now. I'm suing you for getting that cop shot because you started with the violence, pissed other people off, got away with it, and now that violence has gone on to you now. Those cops that are crippled and shot should be mad at their fellow cops for not going after the bad ones, the few bad apples. If there's a few bad apples, get rid of them. If you're gonna protect them, you are all bad apples now. And now everyone has a target on their back because of the violence that you started. How about you sue those cops for allowing this shit to start?
What I don't get is, okay, so what are you supposed to do if your 12-year-old son gets shot and killed within 2 seconds of a cop arriving at a park because they think he's playing with a real gun when in reality it was a toy gun? Like, what are you supposed to do? They didn't ask any questions. They shot him within 2 seconds. What are you supposed to do when you see the video of Philando Castile politely telling the cop, I have a gun in the car, a licensed gun in the car, officer, being polite and still getting shot within seconds? Like, are you not supposed to say anything?
That's
you're not
right.
supposed to
That's
take
right.
to the seats, the streets. You're not supposed to challenge any power
That's
whatsoever.
Exactly right.
That is the message here. And I think that that's problematic to say the least, especially if you gallivant around town pretending like you care about the First Amendment and free speech. Free speech goes further than college campuses and having Ann Coulter or whoever show up and try to rile students up. Free speech means allowing people to speak out when they see injustice. And in this case, there has been countless cases of injustice.
But that's why I mentioned conservatives in the beginning, Anna. It isn't just about this lawsuit. Conservatives have said over and over again that people shouldn't protest things like the Tamir Rice shooting. Okay, Black Lives Matter, they call them a terrorist group because they complain that their 12-year-old son is murdered within 2 seconds and nobody asked a question. It's a toy gun, it's not a toy gun. They just pulled up and killed a kid, right? So no, what conservatives tell you is, screw the First Amendment, I don't care about your right to protest. The minute you protest, I'm gonna call you a thug, I'm gonna call you a terrorist, I'm gonna sue you, okay? Because what do you want them to do? The conservatives want you to be quiet and know your role. And for a long time in this country, that role was they dominate and we're supposed to take it, okay? We meaning all of the rest of us, okay? Well, no, we're not gonna take it. We are going to do things that are American, like protest and demand our rights and demand not to be killed. And it's not too much to ask for. And by the way, I mean, JR didn't have to go as far as he did in his opinion to come back around to the cops. You could just stop halfway. So when you protect cops that kill people, doesn't that incite violence from other cops who think, oh, I can just kill people and get away with it? Look at all of the cases where cops shot people and there was no consequences. So everyone who protected those bad apples are now inciting, under your logic, not my logic, your logic, is inciting and encouraging further violence against black people. Let's go sue all of you, right? No, that suit doesn't make sense. This suit doesn't make sense. And it is deeply un-American. In this country, we get to speak out. And if you don't like it, you use your voice and your First Amendment rights. This is nothing but an attempt at intimidation.
All right, we gotta take a break. When we come back, more stories, including fun stories, I promise. Just come back.
You just come back. Back on the Young Turks, Cenk and Anna with you. Our members of the day are Yuri Dotsenko and Ginger McMahon. Apparently, Anna's going to rage in the postgame today about housing. Some of you enjoy that. So tytnetwork.com/join to get the whole show. And we'll be doing some extra stories online after this hour is up. And also get the postgames. And a free month this month. So go to tytnetwork.com/join and then enter the promo code FREETYT to get that free month. Quick tweets here. Actually, this one's super chat from the last show we did on Friday. Myotis Lucifigus writes in, yes, Francesca is awesome. Glad to see her on the main show. Left is best. That's funny. If you saw the show on Friday, it refers to a story we did. Dave Longland writes in, wow, Anna, I was so against Ivanka at G20, but you make a decent point. And well,
thank you.
Okay, and if Merkel didn't complain. Christopher Nagy says, if this case goes against Black Lives Matter, then on that standard, right-wing radio, Fox News, and conservative websites should be sued out of existence. Well, that certainly is true if the case does go that way.
Right. Okay. Well, one of the defendants in that case says that this is the second time that he's had to deal with a similar lawsuit. And so he's certain that it has no merit. And yeah, I mean, to prove that an organization or specific people have incited violence, I mean, there's a decent burden of proof there, you know?
All right, what's next?
All right. Researchers at Vanderbilt University and also the University of Memphis looked at the issue of regressive taxation. These are basically fines and citations that local law enforcement collect in order to make up for lost revenue. And they realized that there are certain types of neighborhoods that usually suffer the most when it comes to regressive taxes. Now, here's what they found. Using data from more than 9,000 cities, the researchers found that cities with larger black populations rely more on fines and court fees to raise revenue. The average collection was about $8 per person for all cities that get at least some revenue from fines and fees, but that rose to as much as $20 per person in the cities with the highest black populations. Now, Now, they made sure to control for certain factors, including crime rates and also the city's size. But they did find that having at least one black person on the city council had a positive impact on these fees and fines. It actually reduced the relationship between race and fines by about 50%. So obviously, wow, having someone represent your demographic in the city council is incredibly important.
So a couple of things that we get out of this. First of all, notice how we're race baiting by creating facts that have been in place for a long, long time. So the right wing will say, why are you bringing up facts? Facts are really annoying. Mm-hmm. And if they show that there is racial bias in the country, we won't blame the reality. Yeah. We won't try to change the reality. We'll blame you for pointing out the reality. So, we'll call that race baiting.
So let me jump in with something, okay? The researchers here didn't go into this looking specifically at race. They went into this to see how regressive taxation works community by community. And then they noticed that, you know, neighborhoods with a larger black demographic usually suffer the most from these types of fines or these citations. And yes, I think race or racial bias has something to do with it, but more importantly, being powerless has a lot to do with it.
So Anna, that's exactly where I was going with this.
Yeah.
But the reason I started the way that I did is that, so no matter what the reason is, the effect that it has is one that affects African Americans worse. So pointing that out doesn't mean everybody in the country is a bad person, okay? It just means that's a reality for African Americans that if you're not African American, you don't have to deal with. So the fact that you don't have to deal with it doesn't make it not true. It is true, it's empirically true, okay? Now, Anna's right. This is really about power. And the second part of the story proves that out as well. So the reason why this happens is not because people get together in a global racist conspiracy and they go, let's charge black people more because we hate black people. No, they usually do it unconsciously because they know, hey, if we do this, we'll be able to get away with it. And if we do that, we won't be able to get away with it. So if we start increasing fines in rich areas, some of those rich people are judges, prosecutors, or simply powerful in the community, and they're going to complain. And it's going to be a big problem for us. If we do it in poor neighborhoods, well, it's not going to be as big a problem. Now, unfortunately, African Americans on average in America live in some cities that are have socioeconomic condition that is not at the high end of the income bracket, obviously, right? So that is why it affects African Americans more.
Right.
So they think, okay, if these folks can't fight back, let's just make money that way. And if I have to increase tax on the rich, they are going to fume. They're going to be livid about it. And they're going to send lobbyists and all their bought politicians, etc. If I get revenue from people who can't do a damn thing about it, well, that's easy revenue for me, and I'll get to crush the powerless.
Yes, it's easy revenue, and you're right, they don't have a lobbying group protecting them. But more importantly, they don't have the resources to fight these citations in court. So oftentimes, they'll get the citations, they'll get the fees, and the city gets to make its money without worrying about anyone really fighting back. And this is, yes, there's a racial component to it, but more importantly, everyone who is not wealthy is impacted by this, right? We see regressive taxation everywhere. We see it here in Los Angeles. You know, in California, back in 1978, they passed a proposition, Prop 13, I believe, that severely limited the revenue that the state raised through property taxes. And also it led to you needed a 2/3 majority in the state in order to increase taxes. Since we lost so much revenue, what do you think happened? Citations, like parking citations, cops, you know, trolling the streets looking for people who you know, make minor infractions while they're driving, that shot up. And so, yes, again, there's a racial component, but more importantly, we're all affected by this. Real quick, though, I wanted to quickly mention that the Justice Department last year had done, not last year, back in 2015, they did a study on, where was it exactly? After Black Lives Matter protests in Ferguson, the US Department of Justice released a report validating many of these concerns. The March 2015 report found that city officials worked together at every level of enforcement, from city management to local prosecutor to the police department, to make as much money from fines and court fees as possible, ranging from schemes to raise total fines for municipal code violations to asking cops to write as many citations as possible. So this is not good. And I want to give you a quote from a cop. Okay, let's go to graphic 13. This is a cop from the NYPD, New York City Police. When you put any type of numbers on a police officer to perform, we are going to go to the most vulnerable. We're going to go to the LGBT community. We're going to go to the Black community. We're going to go to those people that have no vote and have no power.
Damn, that right there is so telling. And so when progressives fight back against this stuff, or African Americans fight back against this stuff, they're actually fighting for all poor and middle class people. All the people that the powerful, whether it's big government or big business, decide, I'm gonna get money from you because I can. There's nothing you could do about it. So it is imperative for all of us to fight back together so that they don't crush the powerless. And so what this is, in effect, is wealth redistribution. But they're distributing the money from the poor and the middle class to the rich. So they get to share in the services, but they cut taxes on the rich, so they pay less. And they increase fines and fees on the poor and the middle class, so we all pay more. So understand what that is and why it's happening, so that we can actually, as Americans, all fight back against it. Okay, now we're out of time for the serious audience. Rest of you, you know we take a super short break online and come right back. So that's tytnetwork.com/live if you want to watch the show live and free on any given day. And then don't miss the Joe Manchin interview tomorrow. If you're a member, it's live at 11:15 a.m. Eastern. And that's tytnetwork.com/join to become a member and put in the promo code FREETYT to get it free for a month. Don't miss the Manchin interview. It's going to be, I believe, amazing. Okay, we'll be right back. All right, told you, right back at you.
Yeah.
All right, Casper, what do you got?
All right, we're switching gears, okay? We're moving a little away from political news to other, you know, international news and stuff that's going on. This is a tragic story, but interesting because it involves sex. Police in Australia unfortunately shot a man and a woman who were at a sex club in Australia. At least it's a club that has sex fantasy nights and people dress up in costumes and they do their thing. And apparently 40 armed police officers raided the Saints and Sinners Ball, an erotic fantasy dress party described as a no holds barred extravaganza of adult fun on its website at the Inflation nightclub. So apparently someone, a club goer, believed that there was someone there with a gun. And that's what led to police showing up. They show up and
well,
they
see. Well, it would be hard to hide in that context, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they're dressed up in costumes. So could someone possibly have a toy gun? Yeah, so everyone calm down. I mean, ask some questions before you freak out and call the cops. And then, of course, things get out of control. So 40 cops show up. At that point, there was a man and a woman in a compromising position. And cops allege that the man was holding what appeared to be a gun and he refused to put it down. At least that's their side of the story. It's kind of, it's interesting how similar this story is to some of the stuff that we cover here in the US. So Dale Ewens, who was dressed as the Joker, was reportedly left seriously injured after he was shot in the stomach when armed officers mistook his fake gun for a real weapon. And then the woman that he was in a compromising position with, Zita Sukis, was dressed as comic book supervillain Harley Quinn and was unfortunately shot in the leg. Now her injury is not life threatening, his is. And hopefully he makes a recovery, a full recovery. Venue staff have stated that the male victim was not holding anything in his hand, but rather he was in a compromising position with the female partner, which is a normal activity with the nature of this event. That's according to the owner of this club or this event.
Yeah, so obviously a full investigation will tell you who are the real culprits here, but boy, is there a lot of overreaction here. I'm surprised this story is not in America, that it's so they do it in other places as well, apparently. So first off, look, if the guy is in mid-coitus, it is unlikely that he is, in that context, a dangerous guy. Now, if you found somebody like that dressed as a Joker in an alleyway on top of a woman, you might think, oh my God, is he assaulting her? And he has a weapon. Okay, at a sex party, you would hopefully make a different assumption, wouldn't you? Right? And And whoever is the schmuck is, and look, there's two possibilities. One is a schmuck called us in because he's like, oh, everybody's dressed in costumes and some of the costumes have weapons. Oh my God, what if they're real? I'll call it in. Oh, yeah, yeah, right? Or somebody
just. I feel
just,
like that kind of person wouldn't go to this type of event. Like,
exactly.
It's kind of shocking, right?
Which leads to the other, and now this is speculation, other possibility that somebody didn't like the idea of this party. So they made a federal case out of it and said it was really, really dangerous. That's why the Australians sent in 40 cops. That's a lot of cops to bust the sex party, right? So we don't know. That's, we'll find that out in this investigation that they're going to do. But overall, same thing for Australia as you would have in America. Just settle down for one quick second, okay? Allow for the withdrawal method. And see if the guy actually has a weapon or not. You don't need to panic, especially in the middle of a sex party. It is not a place where you normally bring weapons. So give the guy a chance.
Yeah. All right, moving on. This next story is something that I want to share with you guys because it displays how resilient some humans are, how much of a fighter this particular person is, and it just inspired me, so I wanted to share his story. Now, a 38-year-old man from Michigan was diagnosed with a rare type of cancer. It's known as synovial sarcoma. And essentially, it is a soft tissue cancer that started developing on his face. He started noticing a deep pain in his jaw. It got so unbearable that he finally went to the doctor, and then they told him what his condition was. Now, Tim McGrath is his name, and I want to share the first two pictures with you because you get a sense that, you know, he was obviously a very good looking guy, someone who took care of his physical appearance, obviously cared about his physical appearance to some extent. And stop the pictures. Don't go any further. And so, you know, the condition that he was diagnosed with left him severely, deformed. He had a facial deformity because a tumor grew on the side of his face that was the size of a softball. So the next series of photos that we're going to show you guys are graphic, and I want to warn you because they're difficult to look at. But if you can handle it, let's take a look at the next picture. And it shows you what the tumor looked like. So he had to go in for a surgery and have it removed. But the surgery left him, you know, very badly deformed. And the next photo is extremely graphic, so warning there. And that's what he looks like.
That's amazing, man.
Yeah, it's just.
And he fights.
And that's really the reason why I wanted to share this story because, you know, we get caught up in our day-to-day nonsense, our day-to-day drama. You know, we all have our obstacles in life. But here's a guy who dealt with something so serious, life-threatening, obviously something that, you know, takes away something that he took some pride in. And he's like, I'm not giving up. So here's what he said about it. There were so many times when I wanted to give up, and at times it was difficult to find the strength to carry on, but he did carry on. So he had a 30-hour surgery to remove that tumor. He spent 7 weeks in the hospital recovering, and doctors tried to reconstruct his face, but his body kept rejecting it, right? Finally, he comes across a plastic surgeon who decided to do some skin grafts, like using his own skin in order to reconstruct his face. And he's starting to look and feel a little better. I mean, he still has a long way to go, but he created a foundation in order to, you know, share his story, raise awareness about this, and, you know, just inspire others, empower others. And I have so much love for this guy. I mean, I have so much respect for people who keep fighting when life has dealt them such a terrible blow.
Yeah, and he persisted.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we celebrate persistence sometimes on a political level. I mean, this is on a personal level that's amazing. And look, my takeaway from this is you think you had a bad day?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And some folks have a disastrous day. And they didn't do anything to deserve it. It just happened to them. They caught a bad break. And life is full of good breaks and bad breaks. And if you haven't caught a break this bad, count your lucky stars and don't get too weighed down by whatever thing happened to you in your life. It could be a lot worse. And if you did catch a really bad break, you're not alone. And you too can persist. And you too can make it. And obviously, always stronger together. So whether it's family, friends, or community, help one another to get to a better place. And I think that Tim McGrath is a great, great example of that.
We gotta wrap it up.
Okay, sad day.
Sorry.
Yeah, so, a cough on the show, I would never.
It's the worst.
Except for the 88 times that I have. Okay, guys, we got a post game coming up for you as well. And there, Anna is going to get exercised about housing again.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay, but I look forward to that, Rage. It's always fun. All right, you know the drill, you know where to go. Okay, bye-bye.